I'd like to, actually, I think I'd like to call the meeting back to order, is what I'd like to do. That's it, yeah. So we are back. Today is reconvening our meeting from yesterday. It's Thursday, March 31st, and our members present today are Representative Johnson, welcome back, Representative Josephson, Representative Herron, Representative Seaton, Representative Tarr, Co-Chair Representative Nagiak, and I'm Co-Chair Representative Tallarico. I believe that Representative Chenault may have a delay, and he's got some other things going on. He'd be pretty busy. Representative Hawker is excused, and Representative Olson is excused today. So I'd like to let the record reflect that we do have our quorum again to conduct business, and back with us to continue this meeting is our Secretary Julie Kohler and our teleconference aide Matt Kern. Thank you both for being here. My committee aide is Julie Morris, right there, headed towards the back of the room. I'd like to remind you to please turn your cell phones off and put them on silent, please. And we're going to take up the rest of the amendments for the House Bill 253, the mining tax. And once we're done, I am planning on passing this bill out. I'll ask for a motion to do that. And then hopefully we'll have time. We will take up House Bill 286, which are the fish and game violations. So with that being said, we had left in the process of doing our amendments, and we are on amendment number 10 for House Bill 253. Representative Josephson.
I move amendment 10.
Thank you. Representative Josephson has moved amendment 10. We've been joined by Representative Chenault. Amendment 10 has been moved. Is there an objection?
For discussion, object.
Thank you, Representative Herron. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, amendment 10 does a couple things. First of all, I move amendment 10. Amendment 10 does a couple things. The first is it takes the depletion allowance and makes it so that it would only include cost, not percentage depletion. That's element number one. And I'll talk about that first. At our hearing on February 17th, Mr. Spanos, who's with us today, indicated that If I read this correctly, it's at page 14 of the minutes, that the amount for percentage depletion can actually exceed actual losses or actual costs. And naturally, I went to our previous bill, 247, where the committee substitute stopped GVR, gross value reduction, and net operating loss from being combined to create a loss greater than the actual loss. And Mr. Spanos also called the depletion allowance its own line item expense. Of course, that there's no great mystery in that. It would presumably be its own line item expense. So one element of this amendment is to only include cost depletion, not percentage depletion. I think the department has also said that it's complicated when they have returns where there's that switch made back and forth. Currently, the percentage depletion allowance allows a producer to reduce gross income by 10%. Let me restate this. To reduce gross income by 15% for metal mines in a calculation of net income. Additionally, mining companies may reduce gross income by actual cost depletion. I've said that the amendment would dispense with a percentage depletion, but we'd still have cost depletion. Under this regime, it is not hard for companies to inflate expenses. Not deliberately, but I think, as Representative Seaton discussed, and as we've heard, there's some concern about, just as we're trying to contain costs as an institution, the company's containing and reducing costs. Just to wrap up here, companies can inflate expenses or export revenue to report less net income. Using the depletion allowance, the cost of these resources is being expensed at far above the actual cost, at least in some instances. So essentially, although the concept of depletion allowance is consistent with the mining industry, it's part of the mining culture, I think that there should be this change so that there would only be cost for depletion and not percentage depletion, and that's why I've offered this amendment.
You'd mentioned Mr. Spanos. Did you want to speak to that? I know certainly if you were brought up during that. I'd like to give you an opportunity to speak to that.
Thank you, Phil Chair Tallarico. For the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division. And I did talk about depletion earlier. I'd be happy to talk about it more. There are two methods of depletion that are mentioned in the statute. The way the statute currently reads is that a company must use percentage depletion unless cost depletion exceeds percentage depletion, and then they have to use cost depletion. So basically, it's saying percentage depletion is the standard for the expense against the Alaska mining income tax, or rather the Alaska mining license tax, but it allows for the generic cost depletion method in the case that that's a greater expense for them in that year, and that mimics the federal depletion, which has similar language. The reasons are different for federal purposes. It has to do with when you sell your asset, the capital gain recapture, making part of that income ordinary income rather than capital income. The federal statutes read that that when the asset is sold, you must calculate the either allowed or allowable depletion. That doesn't really apply in mining license tax, but we did adopt similar language for the depletion calculation. So the one other topic that Representative Joseph mentioned was that you can, under the percentage depletion calculation, you can deplete the asset beyond its cost basis, which is true. Under cost depletion, when you have a depletion expense, you reduce your cost basis. Under percentage, it's also true, you reduce your cost basis by that expense in that year. So over the life of the mine, you would eventually deplete the cost to zero. Under the cost depletion method, once your basis reaches zero, you can no longer take any expenses against that. You've fully depleted your asset. Under the percentage depletion method, you can continue to take the depletion beyond the value or beyond that cost basis, or adjusted cost basis as it may be. And the percentage is simply a percentage of your gross value, so that expense is given. And in discussions internally on why that might be, why the feds have chosen to allow that percentage depletion beyond the basis, the best we can come to is that they're probably encouraging continued development and want to give some sort of recognition that that there's still value of those assets, and even though the cost has been fully depleted.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dealing with this before, it gets very confusing when you can switch back and forth between years. I think that, when we look at industries and personal property and everything else, we allow for cost depletion or depreciation of the full value of the asset. We don't go beyond the full value of the asset. And so I think that we needed to go back and say, hey, you can get depreciation for your entire asset, but you can't get beyond your entire asset, which the percentage depletion allows. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support the amendment.
Any other questions? Mr. Spanos, as far as this goes, I know you can't do, or maybe you can do kind of a snap analysis for me. What type of problem, just, nuts and bolts, has this presented for us to date? Do we have, I think it was almost led to believe that there was an ongoing problem with this. Is there?
Co-Chair Tallarico, do you mean for the division administering the tax?
Yeah.
It's depletion is a difficult calculation. I wouldn't say that cost versus percentage makes it more difficult. The percentage calculation is pretty straightforward. Depending on the records of the company, if we're in an audit situation, it can become quite difficult to track the adjusted basis of the asset. We generally don't need to under our current
rather for cost we would. So if a company's saying in this year my cost basis is over my cost expense is greater than my percentage of expense and I want to use the cost, we would have to calculate the adjusted basis for that year, and that does become quite difficult sometimes if we don't have records going back because maybe it's the first time we've audited them. So that it can become complicated, but if we were to go just to a simple cost depletion method, we would probably need to update some schedules in the tax return in order to have them report what that adjusted basis is so we can track it simply. I suppose we could do that now and have a easier method, but most do take percentage depletion, and we don't usually run into that that issue. I'm not sure that that helped. Yes, there are some complications with having them both options available, but it's not insurmountable.
Question, Mr.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. If the depletion allows costs to be reduced below the depreciable cost of the item, that means that we're losing mining license tax. So do we know how much in the treasury we're losing to allowing people to depreciate more than the full value of the asset?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, we've not done a calculation on that. Okay. I think if you were to look at how old the mine is, so the older mines, you could probably assume have already fully depleted the basis of the asset and could assume that any depletion would be above beyond what they would be allowed under cost. And a newer mine may be taking cost in lieu of percentage now.
Any other questions? So currently, I know with amendments, we don't have an analysis of where we're actually sitting today with what's...
Co-Chair Talarico, we don't have an analysis currently. We could come up with one based on we don't have that adjusted basis information, but based on the life of the mine or how old the mine is, we could try to analyze and give a rough estimate.
Any further discussion? Wrap up?
Yes, just very briefly. There may be some benefit to the industry. It sounds like in some instances they prefer cost depletion. If they prefer it, it must be to their financial benefit. But at the same time, I don't think they should be able to take beyond the cost basis when they're getting depletion and also enjoying other deductions for purposes of calculating a net profit tax. And so that's why I've offered the amendment.
Okay. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Would the Secretary call the roll?
Amendment number 10. Representative Olson is absent. Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Tarr?
Yes.
Representative Herron?
No.
Representative Schnall?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Co-Chair Talarico?
No.
Co-Chair Nagia?
No.
3 yea, 5 nay.
Thank you. Amendment number 10 has failed. We'll move to amendment number 11. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. I'm going to withdraw amendment 11.
Okay, thank you. Representative Josephson has withdrawn amendment number 11.
And I'd offer amendment 12.
Okay, and I will recognize you to offer amendment 12.
Okay, I move amendment 12.
Thank you. Amendment number 12 has been moved. Is there an objection?
For discussion, object.
Thank you, Representative Herron.
It's not withdrawn?
No. No. 12. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. So Amendment 12, we yesterday looked at the governor, but the law says that a mining exploration incentive credit can cover 3.5 calendar years, essentially. The CS reduces that to 3 years. The administration was hoping to dispense with the credit altogether. I made arguments about the need to do that during periods of production. What this amendment, what this amendment does, amendment number 12, is shorten the period in which it could be exercised from 15 to 7 years. It may have the salutary effect, actually, of incentivizing production in that, as we've seen in committee meetings in February, it doesn't benefit exploration and development. It benefits production. So this says get to production if you're going to get there. And if you don't, then the credit would be lost. So it's another way of looking at reform of this very long period of incentive credits, which hasn't been reformed in a very long time. I think, in fact, I'm trying to remember whether these credits predate the mining license tax itself, which was 1955. I can't recall, but I recall reading something about that. So that's why I'm offering this. Actually, if I could, my notes from February 15th say this credit has existed since 1951, and I think it needs another consideration.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Representative Herron.
So this, Mr. Chairman, thank you. This amendment was within amendment number 4, which we passed, right? And the only difference is 15 to 7. I guess the question is, why not 10? Why not 5? Why 7?
Well, as these decisions are made, we did consult with members of the tax division and then just internally in my office and sort of we're trying to strike a middle ground. We've talked about 8 and we came up with 7. I concede it's not a scientific answer, but that's what we came up with.
So appreciate that. Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Herron.
Is there someone here that could tell us, is this a advantage to the Representative Joseph? Representative Joseph says this may encourage. Is there anyone that would want to add to that comment?
But Mr. Fogles, if you'd like to do that.
So
thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, just so the question is this an advantage to miners, or is it complicated for miners?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ed Fogles, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. So the exploration incentive credit, when if a company has built up some credits and then they start producing, as I understand this program, then they currently have 15 years, up to 15 years to cash in those credits. So this would reduce that to 7 years. I guess the issue would be what their tax liability would be in any given year for those first 7 years and whether they could actually use up all $20 million if they had accumulated the maximum amount. So that would be the, in my view, that would probably be kind of one of the bigger issues. So, it's hard for me to tell you whether that would be a net positive for the state's treasury or some kind of a disadvantage to the individual miner. I guess it would depend on the particular project and, you know, what their tax liability year to year would be.
Any other questions? Thank you for that answer, Mr. Fogles. We appreciate it.
Yes,
Representative Herron.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that's what I'm seeking an answer is, should I vote for this amendment because it does indeed benefit the mining operation? Or does it unfairly harm the mining operation? I guess that's just an open question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Heron, through the chair, I mean, I would imagine that the longer time period that a mining company has to utilize their credits, the more advantageous it would be for the company. This is my interpretation of this.
One more follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Heron.
Yes. Is there an analysis? I mean, is, like the commissioner says, does it mean that there's more money in the Treasury? I guess I wish I knew that before making a policy decision.
That I don't know that anyone has the ability to answer that, but it did, and I may be mistaken, or maybe I got the wrong signals. It didn't appear that yesterday when Mr. Burnett talked to us that one of the particular things in the bill was the exemption, which didn't seem to be a hot ticket item for the administration, because I don't think we see anything on the immediate horizon that's going to get underway. I may be mistaken, though. Mr. Fogles, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, as far as the 3.5-year exemption, yeah, at this point, we don't see any mines coming online in the near future, in the immediate future, that that would be affected by this. So that, again, that would be down the road far enough where it's really out of the range of the fiscal analysis that we've done. So I think that for that particular provision, there will be no immediate fiscal impact to the state, or return to the state, and down the road.
Okay. Could be a good topic for the working group, although we don't want to add a lot of things to the working group's agenda. Representative Josephson.
The Deputy Commissioner, a quick question.
Sure. Oh, you can ask it through me.
Sure. Through the chair, the question from the chair was, is this the hot ticket item for the administration? It is a hot ticket item in that the original bill dispensed with the credit altogether, right? So the administration's position is it doesn't want this credit.
Yes, Representative Josephson, through the chair, you are correct. That provision is in the governor's bill right now today. I think Deputy Commissioner Burnett said that's something that we're definitely willing to kind of discuss as this bill goes forward.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess question. The statement that we don't see anything right now, so we can wait till later or down the road, isn't it more advisable to have changes that the industry knows instead of waiting till a project is about to come online and then say, oh, we need to adjust this because we've got something coming up next year, and so we're going to make a change from what you've counted on?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Yes, I'm not advising the committee to rule on that provision one way or the other. I'm just pointing out that if you delete that tax exemption, there won't be any real immediate benefit to the state's treasury in the near term.
Follow up. So if we have adopted a working group, but this should be an issue that the working group contemplates and looks at to make sure that we get out ahead before we have a mine coming close to production and then we decide to change something 5 years, 7 years from now, it would be much better to have those discussions and in play, whatever we're going to do in place ahead of time. Is that correct? If we're going to make a change like this, you'd want that in place before a mine is ready to come online. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, I mean, I think that would be probably advisable, yeah. But I think you're correct. That would be a good topic for the working group to put it on the table along with all the other components in the fiscal picture for a mining operation. There are a lot of different pieces, and this is one of them. It could be pretty significant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Heron.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess, Mr. Chairman, the administration wanted to remove this. It's back in. My colleague wants to reduce it from 15 to 7. We don't know the advantage or the harm that it meant by reduction. Could the committee, your office, send a note along to finance to request that analysis for their review when it gets there? Unless this, even if this motion does pass, I would think it would be important for the next committee to understand what it means.
Well, if that's a request, we certainly could.
Yeah, that's my request.
Yes.
The co-chair's office send it along for them to seek analysis on this question.
We could certainly do that.
Thank you.
Yes. And Mr. Spanos, please.
Again, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division. I just wanted to clarify the exploration incentive credit and the 3.5-year exemption often get confused, and it was the administration was trying to remove the in the bill removed the 3.5-year exemption, and so I'm not sure that we do have a position on the credit, but we're certainly not
against it. I confuse that all the time myself. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I'm alone either. So, thank you. Any other questions, comments? Wrap-up, Representative Josephson?
No wrap-up.
Okay. Is your objection maintained?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. The objection has been maintained on Amendment 12. Would the Secretary call the roll?
Okay, roll call vote on Amendment 12. Representative Tarr?
Yes.
Representative Herron?
No.
Representative Chenault?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Olson is absent. Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Tallarico?
No.
Co-Chair Nagyak?
No.
2 yea, 6 nay.
Okay, thank you. Amendment number 12 has failed. We'll move to amendment number 13.
Move amendment 13.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Amendment number 13 has been moved. Is there an objection? I'll object for the purpose of discussion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment, again, the administration wanted to collect taxes in every year, and end what I've called the tax holiday for hard rock mines. What this does is the committee has so far rejected that, although it reduced from 3.5 to 3 years the term of the exemption. What this bill does is it ends the amendment 13. It removes the exemption in 2020. Part of the appeal, I think, of this amendment is that it covers, even though, as we heard from the Deputy Commissioner, there's probably no one known to us, and there are only really 6 or 7 players in the near term who are probably in their exempt profile. If there's any concern about that, they would be captured in this window. That is, they would continue to enjoy the exemption for another 3.5 years. Yes, almost exactly 3.5 years. 3 years and 8 months, I think it is. However, following up on what Representative Seaton said, where vested interests could grow during that span under some anticipation that the tax holiday would be there for them, they would know now at the outset that it would not be there for them. So it should. It's designed to offer some comfort to both sides, and put us in a position where, frankly, in my view, the maximum benefit has arrived to the people from the taxation scheme that we have. Thank you.
Any questions, comments? Representative Herron.
small question, does Mr. Chairman, Section 2, I guess, what kind, is it a business license that they shall obtain? I guess I just want that clarification.
Well, I can look at 4365, but yes, this is written so that it attaches itself to the mining tax statute, which is the mining license tax, and it uses the language business of mining in the narrative at line 5, but I think this is part of the mining license tax, and it would repeal that part effective about the reprieve from tax effective January 1, 2020.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other? Mr. Spanos.
I'm Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division, and I just wanted to comment on that if I could.
Please.
Mr. Chair. The mining license is in lieu of a business tax, so if you're only in the business of mining, you can get the mining license through the Tax Division. And you wouldn't need to get a business license.
Yeah, no, Mr. Spanos, there's no business license required for mining, correct? I mean, the typical business license that people have by mining is exempt from that particular license because of the mining license.
Co-Chair Tallarico, that's correct. If you're only mining and you don't have any other business, so if you're mining and building roads, you would need to get a business license.
Business,
but if you're just mining, then the mining license tax, or rather the mining tax license, is in lieu of a business license, and we administer that at the Tax Division.
Okay, thank
that
you.
That also creates a, when you get your license, then you have to file a tax return. That's how we track that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Any questions for Mr. Spanos while he's there? I've got these guys bouncing back and forth all the time. Okay, any further questions at all? Representative Seaton.
I have a question. So Sections 2, which is a person needs to get a license under Section 10, so that takes effect after January 1st, 2020. So I'm trying to follow the construction, Mr. Chairman. So is on page 2, line 13, does that mean that people don't need to get a business, a mining license tax, a mining license until January 1st, 2020? Because I believe the CS right now on page 2, lines 14, says a small a, a person prosecuting or attempting to prosecute or engaging in the business of mining in the state shall obtain a license from the department. Mr. Chairman, can we have a brief at ease while we study this?
Brief at ease. We will come back on the record. We were discussing amendment number 13, and Representative Seaton, I believe you had.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I needed a little bit of going back and forth here because the construction was difficult to follow for me, but I now understand what the bill does. It reinserts the original bill language that the three-year tax exemption goes away, but starting in 2020. So that it doesn't apply to any current mines. That's the Section 6. And it simply says that currently we stay with a three-year exemption until 2020, and then the tax exemption goes away. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Any further questions? Seeing none, wrap up.
Thank you. Thank you for the time, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think that Amendment 13 captures a couple concerns. One of them is those who think that no, in the near term, we were expecting to enjoy tax exemptions. We've heard testimony that probably isn't going to affect anybody. We've heard testimony in this bill and in other bills this year involving resource development that it's important not to pull the rug out, disrupt something and make it less viable. And I think that this also achieves some of what Representative Seaton said, which is that if you're in an early phase of development, you know before you've made serious investment that there's been a change in policy. This policy has existed for 49 plus 16 years. That's, I think, 65 years, if I'm right. And we've been looking in the previous bill, House Bill 247, at the affordability of tax credits. And I described yesterday, I was corrected that the Pebble, for example, there was discussion from Mr. Bruce of receiving $200 million, although that was sort of all sorts of revenue, not just the severance tax or the mining license tax. But I think this achieves some balance between the administration's position, which was a more abrupt end, and a nearly four-year extension of the exemption. Thank you.
Thank you. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Would the Secretary please call the roll for Amendment Number 13? And that would be version N.11.
Okay, Amendment 13, roll call vote. Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Tarr?
Yes.
Representative Chenault is absent. Representative Herron?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Olson is absent. Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Co-Chair Tallarico?
No.
Co-Chair Nagiak?
No.
So three yay, four nay.
Thank you. Amendment number 13 fails. I believe that's our last amendment. I had a discussion with our secretary, and I wanted to make clear on the record that we did adopt amendment number 3, which was the version was N.8, which established a legislative working group to study the tax structure for mining. And I evidently didn't clarify that very good on the record yesterday, so we just want to make sure that it's on the record that amendment number 3, N.8, was adopted. And I think that will help our recording secretary substantially.
And thank you. Just a quick housekeeping, just to be clear, there was a second amendment on deductions of the credit against royalty that was adopted.
Amendment number 4, yes. Yeah. This, I may have been clearer with that one than I was with this one. So thank you. So we have no further amendments, so I'm going to open the floor for a brief discussion on what we have before us. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the adoption of the working group because I think mining taxes are a complex issue. And I hope that as we go forward, we are able to align the industries with the needs of the state. I did indicate earlier that the amount of revenue being generated from all the different industries, we have, I think, tobacco or alcohol is $40 million. We are talking about many things where we don't have as much new revenue to try and balance our books from this industry as we do from those other industries, and I think fishing was like $13 million. So I hope that the working group, or as this bill moves along, we can look towards balancing among industries as well as the broad-based taxes. And so thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the work of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. Any further? Representative Josephson.
Thank you. I appreciate that the committee took some of the governor's position, reduced the exemption by 6 months, increased the mining license tax by a percentage point. I think part of this for me, and I'm going to make it a project, is even though I gained enormously from visiting the Fort Knox mine, it really relates back to this minerals, this legislative research minerals extraction report that says the resource value, for example, in 2009 was just a hair under $2.5 billion, and we received, the state received, as a government revenue as a percentage of that value, 2.76%. And what does that mean? It seems like a very small number, but obviously you have to remove yourself from the oil and gas industry, because even though that's capital intensive, this is really capital intensive, and they're just different animals. I'm glad that the legislature intends to continue to study this issue. Thanks.
Any other comments? Just one other comment I'll make that I know I made the last time we moved a revenue bill. The reminder is, and we've been reminded this several times, that all these things are written in pencil until we actually do them. So I think on Representative Herron's suggestion, we will certainly forward along that information that he'd requested. We would do as the bill moves to its next committee of referral. And I don't know if you've seen their schedule, but they're going to feel like we're piling work on them if we move this thing along. But they've got a heavy schedule, but they're ready to take it on, I'm sure. So thank you very much. Mr. Co-Chair, could I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to move common substitute House Bill 253 Resources 29-GH2924/N as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you. Is there any objection to the motion? I'm seeing none. The bill moves. Thank you very much. We'll take a brief at ease and sign some paperwork. We'll come back to order, and we're going to take up House Bill 286. I believe that Deputy Commissioner Brooks is here to explain the bill to us. We do have a committee substitute that I would at least like to accept a motion on, and I'll object to it after the motion's made, and then we can have a full discussion. If that's suitable to the committee, we'll give a full explanation of what we have in front of us. Mr. Co-Chair.
I make a motion to adopt the common substitute for the House Bill number 286 version 29-GH2958/E.
Thank you, and I will. We haven't had this before, but I will object for discussion, and with the committee's indulgence, we'll have Mr. Brooks, and we've been joined by Mr. Dale as well. We'll have them go through the bill for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game. With me is our Director of Wildlife Conservation, Bruce Dale. We also have on the line today Aaron Peterson from the Department of Law, Assistant AG. And we were hoping for Major Bernard Chastain, but he's in another hearing at the moment, and so we're gonna do our best to work around his absence. We appreciate the committee hearing the bill, and with version E before you, I'd be happy to. There's just a handful of changes that were made in that version. I could run through those real quickly for you, if that's okay. On page one, and I think we've given you this one-page summary of changes. I think you have that in your packets. On page one, on line five, we've added a semicolon that creates an exemption from payment of restitution for certain unlawful takings of big game animals. On page two, line 21, that's section 3. We removed the words tag or permit from an item that can be correctable. We've also removed a reference to the court there. So an individual would be able to correct a violation at any office of the Department of Public Safety is the result of that change. We removed the words tag and permit, and we had a hearing on this bill on the other side, and there was a fair amount of discussion about you could fix a license, but a tag or a permit has a different, they have different purposes. There's recording harvest and those types of things, so it seemed most appropriate just to remove those two words. The third change is on page 5, section 17, on line 6. We add the words and C of this section, and that comes into play down below in section 18 as we work out the changes to 1605-925 there. Still on page 5, the fourth change is lines 14 through 25. Mr. Chairman, I believe those reflect changes that your office recommended to the bill on the restitution amounts. On page 5, line 26, we deleted section 17 from the previous bill. There was a typo there, and it was a redundant section, so that was just a cleanup. And on page 5, lines 26 through 31, this is a new section that provides that a court may not order restitution under section 17 of this bill in a case where the defendant voluntarily turns themselves in and is charged with a violation offense. It also provides that a person must voluntarily and immediately report to Fish and Game or Public Safety a violation that they committed to qualify for this affirmative defense. And again, that was from testimony that we've heard and questions that we've received about the bill. Page 6, lines 21 and 22 are that's change number 7 there, and this was a drafting error to correct a typo in that section, the statute reference. And then the last change number 8 on page 7, line 7, again it deletes the section 7 of the original bill that referenced the court rule, and that was upon consultation with the court system, that was not necessary to have included in there, and so we deleted that section, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I had a chance yesterday morning to really go over this bill, and so I just have a couple questions that I don't think were changed by the CS. In section 6, it appeared to me that although the fine was going to go up, obviously, because it's staring us in the face there in the middle of page 3, that for commercial fishing violations, there would no longer be jailable offenses at 1605-665. I'm trying to think about where in the bill I saw that, and it may be, I don't know if it was in the dealer section or not. But do you have any recollection? It's Mr. Brooks, correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. Do you have any recollection about whether or not the possible penalty of jail was altered by this bill for commercial fisheries violations?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I do not believe so. We do have the Assistant Attorney General on the line, and I might defer to his expertise on this particular question.
Would that be Mr. Peterson?
Yes, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Peterson, if you're there, did you hear that question? Could you respond?
Certainly. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, this is Aaron Peterson for the record. So there was not a possibility of jail in 1605-722 previously. There was and still remains in 1605-723 misdemeanor commercial fishing penalties up to, imprisonment for not more than 1 year or a fine of up to $15,000. So that does still remain and is not affected by the change in 722.
A follow-up, please.
Thank you, and it may be most efficient to go through the Mr. Peterson. Through the chair, although there's, tell us about the taking of a brown or grizzly bear within a half mile of a city dump. You've removed the, not you, the bill removes the potential criminality of that and instead imposes a fine without culpable mental state. Is that what it does? That's Section 8.
Well, through the chair, Representative Josephson, you're referring to Section 8. Well, all this does is it changes may not take. Of course, it adds that in. It takes out with criminal negligence because the, and this will actually go to something that was said at the last hearing, the default mental state in Title 16 offenses is civil negligence. The Alaska Supreme Court found that in a case called State v. Rice that was reaffirmed by the Court of Appeals in 1999 in a case called Orehickey v. State. So actually adding in, or to say that something required a mental state of criminal negligence would actually raise the burden, and we're talking about misdemeanors here. So there is still, it's a Class A misdemeanor and would be treated as such, which carries a jail sentence potentially of up to 1 year. So if that answers your question, then that's all I would say about it. Of course, there is a potential that it could be charged as a violation, but if it is charged as a misdemeanor, then it does carry a potential penalty of up to 1 year.
May I continue? Follow up, just a couple more of this nature. Through the chair, I think this one for Mr. Brooks or Mr. Dale. The bill says that hunting violations within X number of feet or yard from the Yukon to the Arctic will no longer be jailable. Why is that policy decision good, bad, or indifferent? That's at Section 12. It may be the old Section 12. But it's certainly in the bill because it wasn't modified by the CS. It's a narrow provision covering the Yukon to the Arctic. Actually, Section 12 in the original bill treated that kind of offense in that geographic region as a violation only, and the CS seems to say, no, we're going to keep that a misdemeanor. Am I reading that right?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Josephson, I think the old Section 12 is now in Section 13 of this work draft.
Okay. I think you're right.
And
so the question remains, why...
So it retains, through the chair, it retains the original language and adds this option so that you have so that enforcement has the opportunity to charge it as one or the other. It's not replacing it, it's adding the option.
Okay. Last question. Last question about the original bill and the intent behind the bill. Sections 15, 19, and 20, when I read them, seemed to, at least at first blush, for example, Section 15 makes it less of a penalty to interfere with a salmon stream. That is, that would no longer be a jailable penalty. That's how I read at least the original bill. And now I'm looking at something different. And I'm just wondering principally, in the sections I think that are here, 15, 19, and 20, what are we doing in terms of the criminality of interfering or deterring anadromous streams? What does this bill do?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, again, the bill is trying to make consistent the charges for all of these infractions, provide for the opportunity to charge them where there's a culpable mental state in a more severe manner, and otherwise it would be a violation. And I think it may be a better question for the Assistant Attorney General to help me out here a little bit.
Sure. So, through the chair, Representative Josephson, yeah, I mean, that is the entire purpose of most of these changes, are to add the ability to charge as violations where appropriate. But certainly the, in, for example, Section 15, the DPS and Department of Law would retain the ability to charge and prosecute on a Class A misdemeanor for Section 1605-831. It gives flexibility where necessary, for example, on and, well, specifically with respect to actually Section 15 and Section 20, it actually just changes the specific penalties that used to be in place for a fine of, for example, in Section 20, it used to be a fine of not less than $100, not more than $500. It just gets rid of that and puts it into the standard Class A misdemeanor range, which is a fine of up to $10,000 and jail time of up to 1 year. So it's we're getting more uniformity in charging and, well, prosecuting, I guess, more uniformity in what you would expect from a Class A misdemeanor, in addition to changing some of the other penalties, adding in the ability to be charged where appropriate as a violation. But, and that, again, that is already available in many of the charges in Title 16 and, of course, in the Administrative Code. But for whatever reason, there was not that flexibility in several of these, several of the statutes, and that's what we're addressing here.
If I may, through the chair, now to the CS. There was one part of it that was changed quite a bit and was sort of flagged. The original bill said, effectively, if you commit a violation, there may be imposed restitution. Now it says, if you tell us about it, we may very well show you some pity. And I'm wondering why, if the public understood that, and there was scuttlebutt that that's all one needed to do, that people wouldn't just do that in record numbers.
Through the chair, Representative Jolson, this amendment came from testimony that we heard on the bill, and it's trying to put into the law here kind of what the current practice is. We have self-reporting that occurs now. My understanding that public safety encourages that. If you're taking a moose and the rack is a half inch too small and it's an illegal animal, if you immediately take action to self-report, they want to recognize the fact that you've done that. Now, you're still going to get a fine, you're going to pay a ticket, but you're not going to maybe, and you're going to lose the animal, but you're not going to be punished to lose your weapons or other things that might have happened under a different circumstance. So it is absolutely meant as an incentive to self-report where an accidental violation has occurred. Unfortunately, this would be a really good question for Major Chastain to take, because he's had that experience in the field, and unfortunately he's not here today, although Director Dale may have a comment on this one himself.
Thank you, Bruce Dale, Fish and Game. The other requirement that I think Commissioner Brooks filled it in pretty well, but the other requirement is that they have to salvage and care for the meat. And so the meat is delivered to the state, becomes property of the state, and put to use. And so that's another reason that restitution might not be required.
Just a quick follow-up on this.
Follow-up.
I appreciate your indulging all this. Looked at from the defendant, who's not necessarily a defendant, just a citizen, from the citizen standpoint, isn't there some greater vulnerability in reporting? Because now Fish and Wildlife would say, oh, where are you? Oh, we'll come over and check this out. That person could now be charged, jailed, theoretically, fined, not restitution fines, just regular civil fines. I'm just wondering, perhaps that strikes the proper balance, in that the restitution would not be charged, a civil fine, probably a suspended jail sentence, could be imposed. Any comments on that?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, again, from my understanding of this, this individual, in the circumstance that you've just described, the individual would receive a fine, would pay a fine and lose the animal and not have anything more. So I think it is trying to strike that balance that you're referring to.
Okay.
Any other questions for the department? And I think Representative Josephson, I know what you mean. They pull a guy over at 1:30 a.m. headed down the highway with a illegal moose in the back, and his first response is, "I was just coming to tell you guys."
Right.
I know what you're saying. Yeah, but I think there's a lot of judgment. I know at least from the municipality that I serve in, we had issues a few times in the Department of Public Safety. Our brown shirt troopers are pretty good at determining how accurate those statements might be, but I kind of see the issue there to some degree. Anyway, any other questions for the department? If we could, I'll just briefly Deputy Commissioner Brooks mentioned this on page 5. You can see the changes that were made via our office on the on all the dollar figures there. The ones that we're suggesting are the ones that are bold, and the bracketed ones were the ones that were there previously. And I know that Major Chastain had hoped to be online today, but he's got other commitments as well. But one of the things that that I think he wanted me to mention was I actually thought about actual values of some of these animals, the actual meat value of an animal. And if we're going to discourage people from doing this and everything, we should probably be closer to charging them full value for that rather than a discount rate on volume. So it was our idea to move those to those numbers. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was just noticing in comparison to the original version of the bill, almost all of them increased, but the black bear and wolverine, and I just wondered with your experience with those two, if you just felt like the 900 was sufficient increase, for example, for the black bear, or I just thought you might have something to add on that.
Well, thank you, Representative Tarr. And I did. And I'm not a poacher. I don't want to say this the wrong way, but I've certainly seen some of these situations happen close to where I live. Black bears and wolverines aren't hot items for guys that are looking for animals. But moose, caribou, those are usually the ones. Boy, there's no gentle way to say this. The moose is the big ticket item. Mm-hmm. For somebody that's really wanting to do that, that's usually, I guess, the best way to say it, the best bang for your buck, mm-hmm. if you do that. And I would hope that the general idea behind the increase here is a deterrent, a deterrent for people to do that. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Herron.
Yeah, on that point is a, at least in my region, but I think it's pretty much across state, is black bear. There is no closed season, and every Alaskan can take 5. They have become a nuisance to especially the moose population and, more importantly, the calves, and so they are not as valuable as some of the others. The wolverine is
so rare.
Hard to catch anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. See one would be amazing.
That's true. So, any other questions of the department, or I'm I believe I objected, and I'd like to remove my objection for adopting the CS. Are there any further objections? Okay, thank you. We will have adopted the CS, and we have someone. I'd like to open public testimony. We have someone who wanted to testify yesterday, and he's back on the line with us today, and I'd really like to give him an opportunity to testify to the bill, and that would be Al Barrett. Mr. Barrett, if you could identify yourself for the record and please provide us your public testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. My name's Al Barrett for the record. I reside in Fairbanks, and I think you got a pretty good CS draft here. I would also I would like to see some more amendments. I'd like to see the word sport removed from in front of fishing. We have a situation in the state where, you know, subsistence fishermen are not required to have a license to engage in subsistence fishing. And we're dealing with tens of thousands of Alaskans that aren't required. They're not paying into the system, and it falls on other users such as sport fish and commercial to make up for that loss of revenue. The other thing I'd like to see amended or clarified is in Section 5, Lines 7 and 8, where they're talking about Pittman-Roberts money being paid back to the state for falsification of hunting license or fishing license. Instead of to the state, if you're dealing with Dingell Johnson and Pittman-Roberts money, it should go to the Fish and Game Fund and not to the general fund of the state, because that's where those acts money go. I would like you to pay attention to Section 6, where it talks about monetary fines. You doubled the first two offenses. You didn't quite double the third one. But if you look under your restitution where you made your raises, bison, deer, elk, goat, and moose are all over two times the amount from the original cost. And I'm curious to why fish convictions are only doubling, but several of our big game species are more than two times the amount. I guess that's it, because you guys had a really good CS, so that's the end of my comments, or if there's any questions.
Any questions? Any questions for Mr. Barrett? Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I guess it would just, well, if the department could respond to one of his suggestions, would that be okay?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the issue that he raised with the first one about removing the word sport fish, I just wondered if you could talk about that, because I was thinking that the subsistence is managed in a little bit different way rather than sport or commercial. But I want to make sure I don't have that wrong.
Through the chair, Representative Tarr, they certainly are managed differently. Honestly, I'm not quite sure how to respond to his. I mean, sport fishing has been in statute for years and years. We recognize that we have different types of fishing, sport, personal use, commercial, and so it's not a change that we would be advocating to remove sport.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, if I might, I had a couple other thoughts on the other things he raised, just for clarification.
Okay, and I think Mr. Barrett's hanging there with us. I hope he is, so he's listening to
On the fines, the fines currently go into the Fish and Game Fund. There's a distinction between civil and criminal, but they would go into the Fish and Game Fund, so that addresses his one question.
Okay, so they will go into fishing, okay.
And then what I think you heard in testimony from Major Chastain on how the fines were set, there's an attempt to try and tie those to CPI increases since they were either established or last mm-hmm. looked at, and the original version for the fines in Section 6, I believe it's Section 6 related to commercial fishing, as well as the original restitution amounts were tied to CPI adjustments. And so if that helps in the understanding of it.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Barrett, are you still with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
You know, Mr. Barrett, I just want to thank you for your patience. And I know you tried to get a hold of us yesterday, and we went extra, and you took the time out of your day to call us today. So I really do appreciate you doing that, and thank you for your testimony. It really is appreciated.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forgot one little small thing that might help out with one of the questions the representatives brought up underneath Section 18. Line 29, where it says voluntary and immediately, maybe if somebody wanted to define what immediately self-reporting is, how much time that is, it might help. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. We appreciate your testimony. Thank you very much. And I don't believe we have anyone else online to testify. Do we have anyone in the room who would like to testify? Seeing none, I'll close public testimony. So we do have the bill before us, and I believe Representative Josephson, you had an amendment you would like to offer.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I move amendment, it would be Amendment 1. I think it's the only amendment before us.
Okay. And that version would be the end of that would be E.1, correct?
Correct.
All right. Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. It's not that the other amendments today I don't commend to you, but I really, really commend this amendment to you. My concern with the affirmative defense, which allows someone to voluntarily and immediately report a taking so that a technically improper or very improper taking in some instances to avoid the restitution is that I think there should be the simple screen that the person is already previously licensed, tagged, and permitted under Title 16 for the species taken. Otherwise, we're saying you could be in violation of fundamental Title 16 provisions. You could just be a guy who, oh yeah, I didn't have a license, tag, or permit. I shot this thing. Because I think that shows, in that instance, that hunter would really be should be demerited. They're not playing fair. They're not playing by the social contract, which is you've got to participate in this process and pay a license tag or fee. So what this amendment does is it would create a new sub one I think line 28, and I think it makes more genuine someone saying, you know, this brow, I thought I saw three brow tines, there's only two. That's something we can understand, but coming to the plate and not having done these things, I don't think that's worthy of restitution.
And just for the record, we're going to say that I objected to the amendment before I offered you to speak to it without an objection, Representative Joe. I apologize for that, but I'll have the objection. Is there any response from the department?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start off, and maybe Mr. Dale or Mr. Peterson might want to add on to it. But our interpretation of how this would work, if you self-reported and you didn't have a license or a tag, you'd have a lot of other problems besides the fact that you took an illegal animal. So we certainly believe it's implied right now. We don't believe the amendment's necessary. I really don't think it hurts anything either. But that, as I understand it from Major Chastain, when they're in the field, that's already taken into consideration. You can't self-report and not have a license or tag to be out there hunting in the first place. So,
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I find that if someone's out hunting without a license, they're less likely to report taking an animal anyway. Are they going to have all of a sudden a conscience? I think that, you know, they're trying to get away with something, and the best we can hope for is to catch them and hopefully throw the book at them. But it's almost like when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. So, you know, you don't have a permit, you're not going to self-report anyway. You're going to leave the animal, or if you think you're going to get caught, you're not dealing with a scrupulous person at that point. So I don't see a real need for this, although I do appreciate this amendment.
Any further discussion?
Sure, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Herring.
This is what we call in the business a belts and suspenders amendment, I think it's fine.
Okay. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to understand, though, because in this section, you know, a defendant may not be ordered to pay restitution. Through that process, you know, you wouldn't become a defendant unless, you know, right, there's charges of an illegal taking, and you wouldn't have charges of an illegal taking if you had a license, permit, or tag. Is that right? I'm trying to figure out how you know, how that would happen if...
Through Through the chair and Representative Chai, I think you could be guilty of an illegal taking and not having a license. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. there'd be multiple
right.
infractions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it is a may. It has that discretion. And again, I don't. It would not be the practice to provide for this if you didn't have a license, the appropriate license intact. That would pretty much disqualify you if you were even scrupulous enough to mm-hmm. bring it up.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure that this is a may. This is a may not. And a may not does not have any flexibility in it as defined in our statutes. A may not means that a person cannot be required to pay restitution if they fulfill these things. And so I think having this in here as an amendment to make sure that, you know, you did have those things, otherwise you could be required to pay restitution. I don't think it harms anything, and I think it does help. So I agree with Representative Herron that this is a belt and suspenders, but I wear a belt and suspenders, so.
Okay, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One last question. So I just want to think about a circumstance where, so someone had, you know, their license tag or permit, but they were out of season or, you know, took a female when they shouldn't or something like that. So that would be a circumstance where they would potentially have to pay restitution, right? Because, you know, for that other, because it would be considered, you know, taken out of season or whatever, that you would, how would you move forward with that behavior?
Through the chair, Representative Tyler, so if the person was otherwise appropriately licensed, took an illegal animal, and then took steps to immediately report, mm-hmm. they would not be subject to restitution. And there's mm-hmm. there's different ways of doing it. It's been, the major described it to me, you know, often someone's been in the field for a couple of days tracking an animal, they realize it's an illegal animal, and then someone else comes in and shoots it in front of them, they call it in. So there's other people that do report, uh-huh. and there's cell phone coverage in a lot of parts of the state. So it's really, there are ways that the troopers have for determining the effort to immediately report, and did they get a call from someone else before they got a call from the person that took the animal illegally is one of the things that would factor in there. So,
sure.
Can I have a follow-up, Mr. Chairman? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do we need to have, then, it sounds like the way you're describing this, that both of these, you know, items would have to be met. So you would have to, you know, have the license tag and permit required and voluntarily and immediately report the taking to the department and surrender to the department, right? Does this, I know it's just one single word, but does it need to have an and in there so that they are all requirements rather than, will it read like one is, it's an either or rather than a and?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Tarr, so you're suggesting an amendment to the amendment to add the word and? I'm just trying to understand.
Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, on our construction, if it has or at the last, they're all ors, or if they have and at the last, then they're all and. And so this would be an and. Mm-hmm. All three would be required.
Okay. Is that...
That answers that question then, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I actually think this probably provides us some clarity. So I'm going to remove my objection to the amendment. Is there any other objection? No? Well, seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Are there any other, we're really running short on time here. Are there any other questions for the department at all on the bill? Representative Johnson.
It may be off topic a little bit, but these fines, how do they align with other states? I'm thinking about in terms of the Wildlife Violators Compact. You know, they can, other states charge the same amount or the same kind of parallels. Are we in a situation where, you know, Montana, I know they don't have certain moose and stuff, but you take a deer out of season here, they're charged with basically prosecuting and doing all the fines. Are they so far out of whack with the other states that, that we're running afoul of that, or can you just shed a little light on that before we go too far on?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, we, after the last hearing, we began an investigation on it. What we found so far is that many Western states that are more comparable have restitution fees even higher than these. But it's quite, there was enough variation that we didn't feel comfortable bringing in having a defensive statement because we haven't polled very many states yet.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I might, while you're pulling those states, you might ask how they would treat a violator, a resident violator from Alaska in their state. It's just part of the polling. See, would it be too much, too egregious, or not enough, or how would they handle that? Because there's a lot of discrepancy given to the states in that compact. So, kind of look at how they would treat that, and vice versa, how we would treat it if someone came up here and tried to apply or violated there, one of our residents violated in another state. So, if you just kind of look into that, I'd appreciate it. And that doesn't need to be part of this bill, but just something to be aware of. That's my pet bill right there. So,
okay, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other comments, Mr. Co-Chair? I would entertain a motion.
I make a motion to move committee substitute for House Bill 286, 29, version 29-GH2925 /E from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. There's been a motion made to
Representative Seaton.
Was that motion as amended?
Yeah. As amended.
Yes. As amended.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Is there any objection to the motion? All right. Thank you very much. Then HB 286 moves from committee. I'm going to adjourn the meeting at 3:05. I'd like you to sign the paperwork before you leave. And we are adjourned.